This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
A gray, rainy Friday ahead, 100% chance for showers, maybe some heavy rain, maybe some street flooding. Don't be an idiot if, you know, the streets are flooded. Just slow down, of course. And I saw this yesterday. Louisiana state law says, and you would think common sense would dictate otherwise, but there wouldn't need to be a law. Let's put it that way. But Louisiana law says that if you have the lights on, you need to have your windshield wipers on, so be aware of that. Don Dubuque joins us now, 7:15, talk about catching sharks and so forth. How you doing, Don?
Hey, Tommy, I'm good.
Good to talk to you. Let's talk about this picture that you sent us. It's you and looks like a red snapper, a beautiful red snapper that was just bit in half by a shark.
Yeah, it's a partial red snapper, and that is what really is driving this move by the Secretary of Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Commission. I have not seen the biological data as far as stock assessments on the two species of shark that they're talking about, but there's certainly a lot of empirical evidence out there. Anybody that fishes offshore, and even if you fish inshore in certain areas, you've experienced being sharked. You know, when you're reeling your fish in, all of a sudden it stops fighting, and you come in with a half or less than a half of fish, and that's the result of a shark. And the sharks move in on you, and there's not really much you can do other than just pick up and move, and that's not always the best thing to do when you found some fish. But that's the main thing that's driving it from the recreational aspect. But like I said, I have not seen any data, biological data, supporting the claim that these species, these two in particular, the bull shark and the black tip, have recovered sufficiently enough that now we can relax the limits on them and actually take some more, which will eliminate this depredation problem on recreational fishermen.
So, okay, let me take it one step at a time. Years ago, I was at a pumpkin patch thing with the kids, and I think it was first grade or whatever it was, and they were having a picnic, and a spider came across the blanket, and they said, oh, look at it, because, you know, the kids at that age, you taught everything's good and everything else, and a fellow dad who is a lineman for Energy wore like a size 14 boot said, oh, I'll take care of that, and smushed it to the horror of the kids, because they think everything's, you know, supposed to live in part of the ecosystem and everything else. And I get a ecosystem is a delicate thing. What role do the black tips
and bull sharks?
And bull sharks, what role do they play in the ecosystem of the waters of the Gulf, et cetera, Don? How important are they?
Well, they're pretty much the apex predator out there. I mean, there's not too much that dines on bull sharks and black tips. They're up there with a lot of the other species, and they certainly keep other species in check. But when they get out of balance and they get overpopulated, then they start depredating on other species and cause problems there. And we have a very tightly regulated red snapper season. We're assigned a quota annually. Mm-hmm. Then we have this Loch Creel program where fishermen are surveyed on almost a weekly basis and report what they catch. And basically it's almost real time. We know where we are on those quotas. But what the sharks do, if you throw the shark element into it, like that one you saw the picture of, mm-hmm. that fish just gets wasted, and it's not included into the total. It's not included into the total harvest quota catch, so it kind of throws it off and kind of skews it to where it's pretty much a waste. Although some people say, well, nothing's wasted because something's going to eat the rest of that fish once you throw it over, and that's pretty much true.
But when it comes to red snapper and limits, et cetera, the shark would be eating it whether it was hooked or not, right? So where does that play in all of this?
Well, it certainly is, would be a lot tougher for a shark to catch a live red snapper than one that's on a hook and struggling to come up to the surface. Particularly if it's caught in deep water, you'll see that that stomach protrudes out of the mouth, and that's because of a pressure change, because of the quick change in the depth of water, and it's being reeled up. And the fish is defenseless. It can't swim back down until, if it's undersized, then you actually have to have a venting tool on board, and you actually puncture the fish, and you'll let the gas escape, and then when you put the fish in, it can swim back down. But the point is, the fish is pretty much defenseless,
really?
And it's easy pickings for a shark.
Man, and that's just a red snapper that does that?
No, no, it's a lot of the different offshore species. They have a swim bladder, and the gases in it expand, and that's what keeps it at certain depths. It allows it to stay up in the upper column or go down to the lower column, and when you pull that quick change, basically you've heard of human divers getting the bends.
Yeah.
That's basically, it's the bends for fish, right?
So if you're going to release a fish that's undersized, if you don't do that, it dies?
It's going to flounder on the surface. In some cases, it can recover and get back down, but in a lot of cases, if you don't do that, and the law requires that you have a venting tool on board specifically for that purpose. But a lot of times before the fish can recover, if it's floundering on top of the water, the shark is going to nail it.
Man, you know some stuff. I'm going to tell you that. I'm a golfer, not a fisherman. So, again, if you ever want to learn how to hit a flop wedge, that I could teach you. But fishing, I don't know. So what are they trying to do with these limits? And what do you think should be done as far as?
Well, I'm good with it. You know, the black tip and the bull sharks are the two they're talking about. Up until now, and in fact, it's still going to be in effect for a while, and I'll go through that process. The only way you can keep a bull shark or a black tip, it's one per vessel or one per person per day if you want to keep it, and it has to be a minimum of 54 inches long, and that's a pretty big shark.
Yeah.
So a lot of sharks are released. A lot of people don't want them. I think the estimate was totally over a year's time, there's about 165 black tips that are caught and kept recreationally. And maybe half that, about 70 of the bull sharks that are actually caught and kept. They are edible. They're not the best of eating. But I don't see any problem in implementing these new regulations. What it will do, it will allow people to actually not have any recreational limits. You can catch and keep all you like. It will also make a change for the commercial standpoint. Right now, commercial fishermen are allowed 45 per day. It would increase to 55 per trip if this passes. And that will pretty much cut back on the population. And, of course, with all of these regulation changes, they are to be monitored and later on can be readjusted either up or down depending on what the data shows. But the process from here is, in fact, just yesterday, the Secretary of Department of Wildlife and Fisheries sent the request to the commission, which is the governing body of the department, and they accepted it as it was, and they filed what's called a notice of intent. Now that it's a notice of intent, the public has 90 days. They can go in person to commission meetings. They can write in. They can email comments, whether they support it or they opposed it. And then after that 90-day period, the secretary then has the commission reviews. They can make modifications, maybe change it, change one or two or the numbers. And then once they get that into another form, they send that to the Oversight Committee of the Legislature for their approval. Again, it gets hashed out, looked around, comment period goes on. If they take no action, then it becomes law. If they do, then they have the option to modify it if they choose to do so. So we're still a ways away from allowing people. It's not open season on black tips and bull sharks just yet. It's going to be sometime in 2025 if it does pass at all.
Have you eaten shark?
I have, yes. It's kind of a firmer, stronger taste of a catfish.
Mm.
Doesn't have that sweet taste, and there's some bleeding that you have to do.
Oh.
There's certain care in cleaning them to make them palatable. But a while back, several years ago, when sharks were much thought to be more plentiful and there was more of a take, they were actually serving it to kids in the schools, on school lunches.
You should take a picture of yourself and tweet it with the caption, "Man Eating Shark." 7:22. More when we come back. Oh, by the way, there was the University of Missouri fight song before. Traffic now, WWL. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Hi, it's 7:28. Quickly back to Don Dubuque, our good friend, host of Louisiana Great Outdoors. We talked about shark limits. Don, real quick, it's a Second Amendment sales tax holiday this weekend. I just wanted to pick your brain for somebody that wants to get into hunting and they've never done it before. I want everybody to be safe and take advantage of this holiday, et cetera. How would you go about beginning hunting if you wanted to get into it?
Couple of ways. They have what they call a mentor program, mm-hmm. where there are certain people who volunteer to take novices, maybe a kid that doesn't have anybody in the family that's familiar with hunting but wants to learn, has some interest in it. You can team up with them. The other thing I highly recommend, and it's actually mandatory for people of certain ages, you have to take the hunter safety course, mm-hmm. which is not just about safe firearm handling. It's also got a lot about ethical behavior when you're out there in the woods, a lot of other things about safety as far as the way you conduct yourself out there, besides the fact that you have to demonstrate that you can properly handle and fire accurately a firearm.
And where you can hunt, too, right? I mean, that's people. I'm not an outdoorsman. I wouldn't know where to go hunting. I don't know where you can hunt, where you can't. Where you go to a lease, so how do you even determine where you can hunt?
Well, the state has a series of what they call WMAs, wildlife management areas, mm-hmm. and they're located all over the state, and they've got some pretty good hunting and fishing on those areas, and they're open to the public.
What you got coming up tomorrow morning?
We're going to talk about what, my God, we got a guy that took a spotted fawn and choked it to death.
Oh, no.
One of the most repulsive bad boy features I've ever had. Of course, it's going to be raining and pretty inclement weather, so we're probably not going to be able to get a whole lot of good fishing information for tomorrow. But Sunday's looking a whole lot better, and we're going to talk about tomorrow being the opening of dove season. Again, rain might put a damper, so to speak, on that. But if it moves through and we get a little cooler air, it might be a nice opening.
We'll be listening. I love listening to you, Don, on Saturday morning. Thank you, Sarah. Don Dubuque, host Louisiana Great Outdoors, always teaches me something. And again, a reason why I'm a golfer, not a fisherman or a hunter, because I don't know anything about it. We'll take a break, come back, help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Got another college fight song for you, too. Right now, it's time for WWL First News. 7:44, 16 till 8. If you're playing Name That College Fight Song, that was Clemson that you heard before, a.k.a. Hold That Tiger. Mark Rosa joins us now, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Around these parts, around this time, we help you manage your money with Mark, and that's what he's good to do. How you doing, Mark?
Tommy, how are you, sir? Happy Friday.
A rainy, gray Friday is better than a sunny, bright Monday, don't you think?
Yes, sir. I'll take it.
Absolutely. Tell me what's going on.
Tell me, for the past two segments, we've been talking about 401ks, and I brought some things hopefully to light for some employers on how to maybe install a 401k plan if one's not existing in the business. And then for others that have the plan, they might try to make it a little bit more dimensional. I went through that personally when I first arrived at Jefferson Financial in 2004. It was very conservative. I mean, a lot of bells and whistles that we were able to turn on weren't turned on. I'm not blaming anybody. It's just how it got installed. So that was back in 2001. And the more I worked through it, the more it was like, well, I can move these switches around that are allowed by law. And for instance, we had gone over this, I think, at length, to allow people to borrow against their own money. And I know some have an opinion about that it's like, oh, you never should touch that or never borrow against that. And my opinion is if you could borrow against your own money and that interest rate is very comfortable and lower than anything else that you could reach in the market, I think that's what you should go for.
And you're paying yourself back.
And you're paying yourself back and the interest goes into the 401k. I don't know if anybody could get me off of that idea except to say, well, okay, here we go back to the employer to say, well, they fixed the interest rate in the plan for borrowing that is uncompetitive, that's basically higher than maybe alternatives. And because interest rates move around, That's something else for the management or the administrator to look at and say, you know, really, you don't have a good plan here with respect to a person being able to borrow, because the interest rate is name a number 10, and they could borrow money all day long for 7. So let's say you put that back into a better range so the employees can use it. And to refinance a loan inside the program is also a very unique feature, because otherwise somebody borrows against their money in the 401, and they get it down to a balance of like 800 and say, I want to bring it back up to 2000. Well, unless you check this box off and have it approved by the employer, you can't do that. You have to pay it all the way down to zero to start another balance. And that's, you know, it's just too easy to turn some of those things on and let that process continue for the employees. And it's not costing the employer anything. It's just using features that are allowed by law to help people manage their money a little bit better. And Tommy, a lot of people say, you know, the biggest asset you have through life is your house. And okay, I get it, but 401k balances could exceed the value of your home by a multiple of 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So that is just so important. Get people on when they can. Employers can sponsor the plan. They could get the cost of the plan down to a number that's very reasonable and palatable for the employer. But to have people being able to use that is extraordinarily possible or positive. And, you know, you got some people that are just, they're not the CEO of the company. There are people that are just working in the company in positions that could easily see million-dollar 401k balances across their career. So that's, you know, what a big deal for people that would have normally thought, I could never, no, that's not for me, I'll never get there, and they can get there. But and just pausing on the 401k, I just wanted to add something, because I'll segue back to it. The employment picture came out this morning, the jobs report, and they were Wall Street was expecting 165,000 jobs, new jobs created, and the actual was 142. So that's for August. And it was 114,000 last month, which was July. And Tommy, we've seen, like last year, the new jobs report comes out. It started with the 300,000, then it got into the 2s. And now for the past few months, it's in the 1s. So why we want to focus on that this morning, because this is easily going to segue into Monday's segment about what the Fed is going to do. And they've been sitting on the edge of their chairs, waiting to see what the job numbers have been like, and they're falling. I mean, it's the job force is weakening. You have more layoffs going on. We've talked about it quite a bit. And the Dow this week, I mean, the markets got skittish about this upcoming report that was just released. The Dow fell about 2% earlier in the week. S&P was down 2.6%. The NASDAQ composite down over 3%. So the markets were paring back, you know, not knowing what the numbers would reveal. And it's going to, I think it's now posture the Fed. We talked about that they chose not to do anything in July, and they had a lot of people saying, well, you probably should have done something to get this going, to start lowering rates that you so aggressively raised not long ago. So now I think they're postured when you look at the Chicago Merck's tally on where they think the professional money managers think this is going to go, and it's pretty much split 50-50. That changes almost every day, but now as we approach the Fed meeting in a couple of weeks, it's like almost half of the professionals that support that at the Chicago Merck, they're saying they're going to cut it by a quarter, and the other half is basically saying they should cut it by a half because they missed July. So we'll see, but I'm thinking that the stock market is going to like that they'll finally start with what's called the Fed pivot. They stopped increasing rates last summer, and now they're decreasing rates. So that ought to bring a little bit of relief in the economy. But we've got to keep our minds on the reason that the Fed is lowering rates is because the economy is weak. And some of the markets may cheer that by going up. We just got to be mindful in managing our money, and it goes back to our 401ks. That this could get weaker as the year goes on. The unemployment rate could tick up a little bit, and then the markets could really sell off a bit. I mean, you could have, you know, 1,000 points, 2,000, maybe 3 come out of the Dow, and you're going to see it in your 401k balances. So back to the 401k for a second, Tommy. That when our administrator came over, he comes by once a year and talks about the plan. It's you know, because this asset could be the biggest in a person's life, treat it that way. You know what's in your 401k plan, know how your funds are doing. It's their job, the administrator of the company's 401k plan, to have all that information available to you. And what our administrator was telling me, he says, you know, I see two things. He says, I see young people getting into the plan, and they're really not choosing investments that are really conducive to having a long-term strategy of a high balance. They're being too conservative. They're keeping a lot of money in cash. They'll never accumulate anything of consequence because the rate of return is so abysmally low. They got to take a little risk. And some people, it's hard for people to get there. They just got to be, you know, they got to kind of be, I don't want to say coax, that doesn't sound right, but it coax in terms of sit down, you've got a long time in front of you, all else being equal, you really probably should have a couple of investments that would improve your return and in consequence improve your balance over time. And the other thing he sees, you know, people like our age, Tommy, that are taking too much risk, mm-hmm. and they're trying to catch up for maybe not taking enough or not doing the investments they should have or not following some advice years ago. And they're looking down at, you know, they're in the mid-60s looking at their balance. And it's like, this is not going to make it. I've got to push the envelope a little bit to try to get over the hump. And you do that trying to get into, you know, maybe a weakening economy like we're maybe going to experience. And
First News. 744, 16 till 8. If you're playing Name That College Fight Song, that was Clemson that you heard before, a.k.a. Hold That Tiger. Mark Rosa joins us now, president and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Around these parts, around this time, we help you manage your money with Mark, and that's what he's going to do. How you doing, Mark?
Tommy, how are you, sir? Happy Friday.
A rainy, gray Friday is better than a sunny, bright Monday, don't you think?
Yes, sir. I'll take it.
Absolutely. Tell me what's going on.
Tell me, you know, for the past two segments, we've been talking about 401ks, and I brought some things hopefully to light for some employers on how to maybe install a 401k plan if one's not existing in the business. And then for others that have the plan, they might try to make it a little bit more dimensional. I went through that personally when I first arrived at Jefferson Financial in 2004. It was very conservative. I mean, a lot of bells and whistles that we were able to turn on weren't turned on. Mm-hmm. I'm not blaming anybody. It's just how it got installed. So that was back in 2001. And the more I worked through it, the more it was like, well, I can move these switches around that are allowed by law. And for instance, we had gone over this, I think, at length, to allow people to borrow against their own money. And I know some have an opinion about that it's like, oh, you never should touch that and never borrow against that. And my opinion is, if you could borrow against your own money and that interest rate is very comfortable and lower than anything else that you could reach in the market, I think that's what you should go for.
And you're paying yourself back.
And you're paying yourself back and the interest goes into the 401k. I don't know if anybody could get me off of that idea, except to say, well, okay, here we go back to the employer to say, well, they fixed the interest rate in the plan for borrowing that is uncompetitive, that's basically higher than maybe alternatives. And because interest rates move around, that's something else for the management or the administrator to look at and say, you know, really, you don't have a good plan here with respect to a person being able to borrow, because the interest rate is name a number 10, and they could borrow money all day long for 7. So let's say you put that back into a better range so the employees can use it. And to refinance a loan inside the program is also a very unique feature, because otherwise somebody borrows against their money in the 401, and they get it down to a balance of like 800 and say, I want to bring it back up to 2000. Well, unless you check this box off and have it approved by the employer, you can't do that. You have to pay it all the way down to zero to start another balance. And that's, you know, it's just too easy to turn some of those things on and let that process continue for the employees. And it's not costing the employer anything. It's just using features that are allowed by law to help people manage their money a little bit better. And Tommy, a lot of people say, you know, the biggest asset you have through life is your house. And okay, I get it, but 401k balances could exceed the value of your home by a multiple of 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So that is just so important. Get people on when they can. Employers can sponsor the plan. They could get the cost of the plan down to a number that's very reasonable and palatable for the employer. But to have people being able to use that is extraordinarily possible or positive. And, you know, you got some people that are just, they're not the CEO of the company. There are people that are just working in the company in positions that could easily see million-dollar 401k balances across their career. So that's, you know, what a big deal for people that would have normally thought, I could never, no, that's not for me. I'll never get there. And they can get there. But and just pausing on the 401k, I just wanted to add something because I'll segue back to it. The employment picture came out this morning, the jobs report, and they were Wall Street was expecting 165,000 jobs, new jobs created, and the actual was 142. So that's for August, and it was 114,000 last month, which was July. And Tommy, we've seen like last year, the new jobs report comes out. It started with the 300,000, then it got into the twos. And now for the past few months, it's in the ones. So why we want to focus on that this morning, because this is easily going to segue into Monday's segment about what the Fed is going to do. And they've been sitting on the edge of their chairs, waiting to see what the job numbers have been like, and they're falling. I mean, it's the job force is weakening. You have more layoffs going on. We've talked about it quite a bit. And the Dow this week, I mean, the markets got skittish about this upcoming report that was just released. The Dow fell about 2% earlier in the week. S&P was down 2.6%. The NASDAQ composite down over 3%. So the markets were paring back, you know, not knowing what the numbers would reveal. And it's going to, I think it's now postured the Fed. We talked about that they chose not to do anything in July, and they had a lot of people saying, well, you probably should have done something to get this going, to start lowering rates that you so aggressively raised not long ago. So now I think they're postured when you look at the Chicago Merck's tally on where they think the professional money managers think this is going to go, and it's pretty much split 50-50. That changes almost every day, but now as we approach the Fed meeting in a couple of weeks, it's like almost half of the professionals that support that at the Chicago Merck, they're saying they're going to cut it by a quarter, and the other half is basically saying they should cut it by a half because they missed July. So we'll see, but I'm thinking that the stock market is going to like that they'll finally start with what's called the Fed pivot. They stopped increasing rates last summer, and now they're decreasing rates. So that ought to bring a little bit of relief in the economy. But not we got to keep our minds on the reason that the Fed is lowering rates is because the economy is weak. And some of the markets may cheer that by going up. We just got to be mindful in managing our money, and it goes back to our 401ks. That this could get weaker as the year goes on. The unemployment rate could tick up a little bit, and then the markets could really sell off a bit. I mean, you could have 1,000 points, 2,000, maybe 3 come out of the Dow, and you're going to see it in your 401k balances. So back to the 401k for a second, Tommy. That when our administrator came over, he comes by once a year and talks about the plan. It's because this asset could be the biggest in a person's life, treat it that way. Know what's in your 401k plan, know how your funds are doing. It's their job, the administrator of the company's 401k plan, to have all that information available to you. And what our administrator was telling me, he says, I see two things. He says, I see young people getting into the plan, and they're really not choosing investments that are really conducive to having a long-term strategy of a high balance. They're being too conservative. They're keeping a lot of money in cash. They'll never accumulate anything of consequence because the rate of return is so abysmally low. They got to take a little risk. And some people, it's hard for people to get there. They just got to be, they got to kind of be, I don't want to say coax, that doesn't sound right, but it coax in terms of sit down, you've got a long time in front of you, all else being equal, you really probably should have a couple of investments that would improve your return and in consequence improve your balance over time. And the other thing he sees, people like our age, Tommy, that are taking too much risk, mm-hmm. and they're trying to catch up for maybe not taking enough or not doing the investments they should have or not following some advice years ago, and they're looking down at, they're in the mid-60s looking at their balance, and it's like, this is not going to make it. I've got to push the envelope a little bit to try to get over the hump. And you do that, trying to get into, you know, maybe a weakening economy like we're maybe going to experience. And then it's like then the, you know, the balance falls. You feel completely disgusted about it. You don't have enough years in front. I remember during the credit crisis, there was a guy downtown. He had $1 million in Citigroup stock. It was at $50 a share. And after the credit crisis, it was at $9 a share. His $1 million went to 18,000. He was within a year or two of retiring. Well, guess what? Guess what happened in a year or two? He was nowhere close to retiring. He was trying to build that back up. The part was that he put too much concentration in a single stock, and the credit crisis was very impactful to financial institutions. So that was a case I don't like to repeat because it's so, I mean, it was so destructive to this one guy. I could see his face. And he was pushing too hard. Well, I'm going to knock the cover off the ball in my last 2 years. What if something goes wrong? What if we hit some headwinds? What if it really pulls back? Then it's almost in some cases, I won't say, you know, to say the word impossible, that's kind of dramatic, but it's like you might never get that money back. You might never see those balances again. So it takes some work. It's worth the effort. And for so many that are contributing to a 401k, bravo, good for you. But take a little time and understand what's going on there. And the HR department at your work, you know, could get you in touch with the people that could tell you, they could give you a plethora of information about what you're doing and maybe do something differently. Or maybe say, no, you're right on target. You know, just keep cooking. And the choices that you've made should serve you well. I mean, nobody knows what tomorrow is going to bring, but this, you know, it's through decades of market analysis and understanding of markets that brought us where we are today at record highs on Dow's and other indices, and people have benefited by it.
So if you're younger, you got to be willing to take some risk and realize it's going to go up and it's going to come down. It's going to go up again. If you're older,
right,
it's not going to stay up forever. So it might be time to start putting it into some more safer things. Valuable information.
Yes,
thank you, Mark Rosa.
Thank you.
Pleasure as always. We'll take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street Monday morning markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. More when we come back. Time now, WWL traffic.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.